Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Stop by Club Hollywood Casino Shoreline and Royal Casino Everett and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, final hour here of Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We are a half hour away from Chat with Pete Carroll. That should be fun, a little post-draft conversation, kind of go over everything that happened this offseason right up until today with rookies showing up for rookie minicamp. And, Brock, I know you're going to be out there watching and seeing how these guys handle the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a lot of pressure on them.
They do, but that's part of the evaluation.
Those undrafted rookies have a lot of pressure on them.
Oh, yeah.
The tryout guys.
Yep, that's right. But that's what's cool, too. Too, is they get a chance, staff does, to see who can cut through, who can still play, knowing that, man, if I run the wrong route or I screw this thing up a couple times, I may not even be here, right? With all these rookies that are on a tryout basis, even if I am an undrafted free agent, got a little bit of money, there's no guarantees in this place. And then to finally get to hear Ken Norton, see his fingers probably all taped up out there, right? He's going to let these rookies know that they're no longer at Notre Dame or Texas or UCF. They are here in Seattle. And then honestly, and we'll talk to Coach about this with Brian Schottenheimer, Mike Solari, you know, the impact and the effect and what my eyes see with those guys now in charge. So, yeah, plenty to see this afternoon and talk to with Pete here in a half hour.
Yeah, Pete Carroll coming up at 9:30. Don't go anywhere. We now have a chunk of time, though, if you guys want to weigh in here on what the Mariners did with Ichiro. We've been discussing all day. Essentially, he moves from being a player. He's not retiring, but he's moving into a front office job where he will do a lot of what he was already doing, except he won't be in uniform and he won't play during the games. He won't take up a roster spot. He will stretch and be around the team. He'll be on the team plane. He'll be down in the clubhouse. He'll do a lot of the things that Ichiro does, except he won't play. And they've been really happy with that.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned in uniform, and you sort of take a crack at him. You're like, oh, you're going to be in uniform. What a joke. Managers wear uniforms.
Like, they don't take BP. They don't visualize their play in 2019.
Baseball Scott Brosius is out there in a uniform. That's
yes,
true.
That is true.
They all wear uniforms. Weird. It's a silly part of baseball. I mean, Terry talked to Terry Francona about it. He was willing to be fined just to wear his red pullover instead of a jersey. But that, for whatever reason, is part of baseball culture. Guess, this is unique.
It's okay, let me just say this, okay? And let's get to all these phone calls.
206-421-3776.
And I know you really enjoy me being on the other side of this.
Funny.
And you're trying to, like, boogeyman, like I'm all peeved and everything else. So it's great. You can do what you want to do.
I'm not doing that.
You do your boogeyman.
No, you're not mad at all. You're right.
I'm not really that mad.
No, not at all.
There's just as significant a chunk of me that I feel bad for Ichiro.
Sure.
And this is placating it.
I agree.
It's like, hey, you know what? Yes, come to the clubhouse, take BP, stretch, run, research, do all of this. Think you can still play in 2019 when the league has told you you can't. That if you're on waivers, no one's picking you up. So you're just kind of like placating this belief in you can't play anymore, Ichiro. You can't. And I know Father Time stinks, man. It really does. But he got you, and he gets everybody, and somehow you outran him to 44 stinking years of age.
That's a good point you're making, and that comes back to some of my thoughts on the Mariners being a little too nice. They won't have that tough conversation. They won't make the tough choice. They won't tell Ichiro, look, dude, you're done.
Yep.
That's not who they are.
Yep.
And in most cases, and at times in this one, I've thought that's been a hindrance for them. At the same time, there's no need to do that here. There's a win-win situation this time where you allow the guy to be around, to be an extra coach, to be around the team, to continue doing what he's already done for a lot of the guys that are here, and you don't have to use a roster spot in order to do it. And by the way, going on to this now, the way they do it, he cannot play anymore in 2018.
Correct.
So they can't just bring him back. They can't decide at some point they want to bring him back. That's not an option for them. If they had wanted to do that, they could have DL'd him for a while, but they didn't. They decided to put him on as a special assistant to the chairman. And so because of it, he gets to do a lot of the things he was helping with. He gets to help Scott Service's staff without actually taking up a roster spot. I'm surprised that there's much negativity for this.
Yeah.
Like, great. That's a perfect situation.
Okay, well, the other thing I would ask you is, do you believe they have an optics issue? Do you believe that what fans believe with their eyes or want to or like
to believe? Have a major, major issue with not having won in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the beginning and end of it.
Yes.
I don't think the other stuff matters.
Okay. I don't think it matters in winning and losing for these players on the field. I would agree with you. I think it does matter for ratings, for revenue, for attention span, for what you're going to give this
team.
I think
that's such a small margin. That's a marginal part of it. At the end of the day, why were there 8,000 people there last night? Because they haven't won in 17 years.
There were 13,000.
That's not true. I was there.
Well, there were 13 on the
I was
paper.
There. You can tell me whatever number you want. Yes. I was there, and that's not the case.
Yeah.
And there'll be 30, 40,000 there each night over the each day over the weekend here. It'll be a fun series against the
Angels. And they take 2 of 3.
And a great vibe.
And go 8-1-2 and keep this winning train going. There will be more eventually.
Eventually, but it may not even be this year.
Yep.
It takes a while to pierce people's consciousness. It really does. And when you've been out of it as long as they have, it takes a while before people will start to recognize. Let's hit some of the phones. 206-421-3776. Phone line's buzzing a little bit here on this. What do you make of how the Mariners handled this situation? Chuck's in Kennewick. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I am completely on the side of Brock.
Okay.
And my reasoning why is I think they're doing this just to save face for making the blunder of re-signing Ichiro and bringing him back. I think re-signing Ichiro was almost as big a mistake as when we traded Andrew Jones for Eric Bedard.
It was Adam Jones.
Adam Jones. That's all right.
Yeah. Oh, Adam Jones. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Center fielders.
And I think it's a mistake.
Why was it such a big mistake? Why they need to save face?
Because they realized that he couldn't play no more, and I think they brought him back to try to put more fans in the stands, which isn't working. And
you don't think it had anything to do with just needing an extra outfielder until Ben Gamel came back?
No, because they could have. I mean, they turned D. Gordon from second base to an outfielder. You tell me they couldn't have taken a platoon guy from the minors that could have done better?
Well, at the time, not really. I mean, they were sort of out of outfielders. I mean, the guys they had brought in to do that were all hurt also. I mean, Neuenheis and some of those other guys.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say a mistake. Thank you for the phone call. I don't know if it was a mistake to sign him. Let's just be very clear, though. From the conversations we've had, it was well thought.
Yes.
It was not done on a whim. It was not, well, let's bring Ichiro in. There were conversations with GM, with ownership, with manager. Like, how are we all going to make this work?
There was an out strategy at the beginning that involved handling Ichiro the right way, you know, having a classy way and a dignified way of allowing him to move on without forcing the Mariners to keep him any longer than they wanted him to be on the team.
And as Lydia said, he's a researcher. He is a scientist of sorts. So I thought I would come up with like a little like jingle, a theme song for Ichiro the Science Guy.
Right. Ichiro the Science Guy.
Ichiro the Science Guy.
Ichiro, Ichiro,
Ichiro the Science Guy.
Ground ball base in the right field.
Singles rule.
Holy smokes, this guy is amazing.
Ichiro the Science Guy.
Stretching keeps your ligaments loose.
Ichiro the Science Guy.
Ichiro, 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 Ichiro,
Ichiro the Science Guy.
Wow, it's got quite the Disney Channel feel to it. Can't wait to watch that program. Hunter's in Puyallup. Good morning, Hunter. What do you make of all this?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm completely with you, Salk, on this one. I think just it wasn't a good move on the get-go to the start by the Mariners' part. And my question to Brock is, coming into this season, what was your overall expectations for Ichiro? Was it hitting 300 or...
It was zero. It was that he couldn't play anymore. It was that Father Time, unfortunately, caught up to him. And maybe, you know, last year in the second half of the season, he started to pinch hit, and his numbers were pretty decent in that role. But ultimately, in the American League, where he's going to have to play a little defense and have to play in the field because he's not a DH and not would do any of that, and with other options, I had zero expectations this season.
I think part of the conversation, though, is, you know, when you hear from Chuck saying this is a gigantic mistake, how? They're competing for first place. They're playing winning baseball with basically a similar roster to what they had this year. All they did was add D. Gordon. By the way, D. Gordon's like Ichiro's best friend.
Yep.
If the only thing Ichiro did in his month here was help D. Gordon make the transition comfortable to the outfield and play and be the kind of energy guy he's been so far this year, is that not enough? If D. Gordon has been the spark plug and everything they've needed and the one change they've had from the previous years, is that not enough?
But you know the beauty of baseball, impossible to quantify.
Of course it is, but that's why the idea of declaring this a huge mistake, I'm not sure I understand that.
Yes.
If they were 10 and 20 right now, I'd say you're right. Yep. What a disaster. I can't believe it. And if Ichiro was playing in every game, he was a backup outfielder. who did his job while he was here. Was he great? No. Do I want him on the roster? 100,000 times no. But to stick around and make everybody happy? I don't see
if he's on the roster in 2019.
If he's on the roster in 2019 and takes a meaningful at bat, I will stand right here with you and say it's a mistake.
Will you vomit with me?
I don't.
Jay Buhner?
You know what? I'll do it. I can make myself vomit. I'll happily vomit with you.
Because you got that heartburn, right?
I will be happy to make myself vomit.
Don't take your heartburn pills.
206-421-3776. What do you guys think? Jump aboard. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Heritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. Award-winning spirits, including BSB and BSB 103. Brown sugar bourbon at 103 proof. Throw your tongue the heater. You can't spell baseball without the BSB Lounge.
Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Text message 710-710, powered by Coors Light. If the Mariners only cared about marketing, then this weekend would have been his, quote, farewell tour. That argument is now bunk, says the text message. I think there's probably some truth to that. It's Brock and Salk. Good morning. Hope you guys are having a good day. We're here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Pete Carroll will join us coming up in 15 minutes, so looking forward to talking to him, Brock. We've been taking a lot of your phone calls on this, and just to kind of lay out the positions, I like what the Mariners did yesterday. I don't think it's perfect. I don't know that this is exactly the way I would have handled my business, and I do think that they have an issue at times with just being so nice, and it's ingrained in the entire organization. Sometimes that's really great, and other times I think they're a little nice for my taste. But at the end of the day, to me, this was a classy way of handling the end of the road for a really meaningful Hall of Fame player that allows him to contribute to what they're doing moving forward in the same way that he was already, without being on the roster, without taking away. All it can do is add.
Yeah, I would say two parts. I would tend to agree with a lot of that, Mike. My biggest challenge in this is just simply the optics. It's our perception and reality conversation. You spit out the reality, and any baseball guy is going to have a hard time arguing against, because he's not playing this year. So anything that we've talked about for the last 6 weeks that frustrates baseball guy, that's out. So the reality, I understand. But the perception and the optics that this organization has to fight through 17 years of some struggle, an organization that in the past has been in silos, has hung on to the past way too much, who have had questions about is winning first and foremost, or is it the marketing, or is it the business, or is it the tickets, and is winning absolutely trump everything else. This, from an optic standpoint, was just not
though.
A clean break.
I legitimately think that that's what this move is about. That the reason they wanted to break this way with Ichiro was because they wanted to find a way to keep him around the organization right now.
Well, then they're just
Brock, I don't think this was part of the plan before the year started. If that was the case, why did Ichiro only get signed after Ben Gamble got hurt? If the goal was always to have a whole Ichiro move this year, then I think they would have done that. I think my feeling on what happened is that once he got here, Scott Servais liked what he got around the clubhouse from him.
Yep.
They love. I'll play you the Jerry DePoto story again from Danny Dave and Moore yesterday with the Jerry DePoto show. This is cut five, and his description of seeing Ichiro on the team playing with a lot of the younger guys.
I've watched. We've obviously been playing only a handful of weeks, month and a half, but our first couple of trips, when you see Ichiro take his seat on the plane and he's sitting next to D. Gordon, and Mitch Haniger swings his legs around from across the aisle and immediately engages, and the guy sitting in front of him leans over the seat and starts to into the conversation. And Ichiro, I don't want to say he's holding court, but those players are trained on what he's thinking or what he's talking about in that moment, whether it's just the casual conversation or his recall of past encounters on a baseball field, the way he prepares, his regimen. He fascinates most players because of how disciplined he is and his preparation. And, you know, that exposure to greatness is truly invaluable.
And maybe not a coincidence that those two guys he mentions, D. Gordon and Mitch Haniger, are having as good a season as anybody.
Yep. And, you know, there's probably a decent – I hadn't thought about this till right now, but, I mean, isn't that what the Yankees did with Russell? Just want to expose you for spring training. Come put a uniform on, you know, rub shoulders with our guys for 3 weeks. How do you feel about that? I want to expose you to the greatness of a leader that's been a world champion on the other side. A lot of folks scoffed at that. Like, come on.
I liked it from a Yankees perspective. It only annoyed me from a Russell perspective. Yeah. Aaron's in Seattle. Good morning, Aaron.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I think it was a good idea bringing Ichiro back this year. We got him for dirt cheap. You know, didn't really spend anything for him. And, you know, you got your return on that money with the positive things he brings. You know, he robbed the homer earlier in the year. That was great. That was it right there. And then him just being around, he needed that extra roster spot, you know, for Heredia and Healy coming back and keeping those guys on board. He has a chance to be a part of something special this year, I think, with this team. And him being around it, I think it's good. And I know the optics might look different, but we needed him to come up with a big hit the other night against the A's that we lost, and no, he didn't. So that was it. He wasn't doing a whole lot other than that. But
it'll be interesting, Aaron. Yeah, thank you for the phone call, my friend. It'll be interesting. You know, for 30 games, it's one thing when you were a player still. It'll be interesting over the next 130, mostly on Ichiro.
If he wants to?
Yes, mostly on him. We're like, okay.
But you had it earlier. What else are you going to do?
Yeah, and there's a delusion. And you know what? And I say delusional, not in like a mental illness kind of way at all. I say it being around guys, Mike. The Jerry Rice still thought he ran 4.4 when he ran 4.9. Like at 44, whatever he was, or darn close to it, he still thought he was the same guy from 1984. The unbelievably talented and gifted, and those that accomplish at that level, do have some form of that. Like, I'm just not going to listen to anybody. And I'm certainly not going to listen to Father Time defeat me. Nobody is going to defeat me. What you looking
are
at?
Are you wearing your dress sweats here?
No, bro.
Oh, okay. Oh, those are pants.
Yes.
They're black. I thought maybe you were wearing dress sweats today.
Knock
again.
It off.
Well, you're wearing them in the lounge. Now you're wearing dress
you're
sweats to work.
And nothing
Sorry.
I was
now
saying.
Now I heard it's about Jerry Rice and legends, and they don't know what to do. And I think Ichiro's in the same spot.
He is, because if this is truly about showing him respect from the Mariners, I honestly, I don't know if this is the way to do that, or if the better way would be to kind of get him out of his own way.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
Letting him be a 44-year-old clinger on isn't.
I don't think
the
they see it that way, though. I honestly think they see him as sort of an extra coach. And if he's a guy that's around helping these guys and working out with them and doing everything he does, it's had a lot of success so far this year, and I think they just want to continue that.
That's a defined role, and all those guys know it, right? And all of those old guys that have been out for 5 or 10 years can't wait to put the uniform back on, Mike, and be a part of it. He envisions that he's playing in 2019. Okay, his interpreter and Ichiro are very clear. I'm not retiring. I'm not retiring. I'm not retiring.
You're right.
I am researching, I am working, I'm learning more about me so I can play in 2019.
That part's a little weird. Okay. Paul's in Seattle. Good morning, Paul. You can have the last word here before Pete Carroll.
Hey, Brock, I really don't understand your optics argument, because if there was an optics issue, you would have had that in the beginning of the year. And then
hold on a second. I'll let you finish. There was one in the beginning of the
year.
Was
there? He got the loudest ovation on opening day when we took polls. People generally were excited about it.
You don't think that there was you don't think there was a large contingent, not those that were there, Mike, that are in the stands or paying the money, but the hundreds of thousands watching that had some you never heard any of that frustration?
I'm not saying that there wasn't some, but again, I mean, we took polls on it on Twitter. They're not perfect, but mostly people were excited about getting each other.
Okay, continue, my friend. Yep.
Yeah, so I think this is the best this situation could have looked. They cut ties early, not necessarily cut ties, but they ended it early with him because they knew they had a chance. They're not bringing him on for 5 or 6 months. They're cutting it early because we got a good team this year. We've had our best month start since 2008.
Appreciate it, my man. Thank you. Yes, they have at 18-12, but I do feel a little bad for Ichiro. I do feel like a little, oh my gosh. I mean, what?
I don't know what he's going to do. I mean,
it's
kind of
like
when
the veteran has their kid in the clubhouse and like he gets to shag fly balls and maybe sometimes take some BP. Honestly, that's where I'm like, dude, this isn't the most respectful way to do this. Letting him still be out there.
You never had a grandpa that you just kind of tell him everything's going to be fine. You never worked with somebody that maybe wasn't as great as they once were, and you find ways to sort of string them along. I mean, like, this is not that unusual in society. I really don't think it is. So, all right, let's do this. Let's move on. We'll see how this goes. It's going to be a fun weekend series against the Angels. Hope to see you guys out there for a couple of these ball games. Should be pretty fun. First place on the line. Pete Carroll will join us coming up next. First time we've talked to him in what seems like forever. He's on the day of rookie minicamp, talking about this draft, talking about these new assistant coaches, their identity moving forward. We got a lot to get to with Pete. We'll do it next. I'm Brock and Saul.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
One last note. I forget taking back. No idea.
That's the voice of Coach Carroll.
Hey, what's
Pete
up?
Carroll is with us for the first time in forever.
Where
good
you
morning,
guys been,
Coach.
Man?
What do you guys do? You just climb
Hold
under,
on a minute.
Climb under the rock.
You guys locked yourself into a fortress of solitude after the season ended. Nobody heard from anybody in this building
well, that's
for like
not
2 months.
Our fault. You guys got the shows.
What were you guys doing after this season? We didn't hear from you forever.
We've been working, man. We've been working the whole time. We're finally getting a little football with the pups coming in. It's really it's a nice time of the year for us. We've been working hard to get to this point.
We'll back up at some point and kind of get to how we got to today. But what does this mean to you, seeing the rookies come in for minicamp?
Well, it's really exciting. This might be the biggest group we've had. We got 70-something guys in here, and so we're going to have a really good look at what it feels like to have, you know, kind of full numbers and in the lines and stuff. So we get good reps and good turns, and we'll see where they fit in. Of course, we're really excited about the draft picks that we've seen, and there's a number of exciting free agent guys that we've acquired too. And then, of course, the story of the tryout guys. You know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? You know, so there's going to be some fun things to watch for.
Story or two over the month of April as things unfolded with some of these draft picks, where you're like, oh man, really, really hope we can get. If it's Shaquem or if it's the punter, just, you know, a little. I always love a little backstory.
So. Yeah, great. Well, the
and I know you love sharing
throughout.
Them.
You know, our process, we really do zero in on guys. We get find guys that we want to fit to our club, and guys we think have a role that we can really manage. And so we're looking for guys through the draft, and it happens quite often. Where it's about John, you know, finding the right spot where you can get guys. And so we hit it pretty good again here with guys we want. You know, start right at the top. We really were excited about finding a running back. We want to see if we could find a guy. And there was a number in this class, so it was really it was loaded. It could have fallen a number of different ways. But really, I think you know, bringing in Rashad is going to be something that the fans are going to love. He's such a dynamic football player, young, healthy, strapping kid, and loves to play and is excited to be part of it and really humble and all. And really fast and explosive, as you know, you guys have watched. That's fun. We were fortunate to get Rashim. You know, we didn't know that was going to happen. We thought he would go higher. But there was a little bit of issue about him that we've really had. John did great research on him, so we knew what we were getting.
The medical issue.
Yeah, the medical thing that, you know, he had a knee injury like 3 years ago that was of concern, but he's played thousands of snaps with it, so we know that he's in good shape and ready to go with that one. Just on down the line, I mean, these guys, it was really fun. Disley was a big deal. We've been talking about the running game all offseason, and we thought that he was the best run blocker in the draft. Some guys might not have looked at him that way. We didn't care. We knew what we saw, and so we bring him in with that thought, and just keep on going. You know, it's a really fun class.
So if I look at what you've done with the running game to try to improve it for this upcoming year, see three or four potential changes. What you did with the coaching staff, with both the offensive coordinator and the offensive line coach. What you did at tight end, you let both Jimmy Graham and Luke Wilson go and end up drafting Will Dissly and bringing in Dixon. And then what you do at the running back position with Rashad Penny. When you analyzed it during those couple of months we were talking about after the season, was that where you saw most of the problems with the running game in the past?
We needed to shift gears a bit, you know, to match up with the guys that we have here, and I thought that was part of it. We wanted to make sure and return to the emphasis because we know how it fits together. We see the formula, you know, and when we can also obviously see when it's not quite right and the balance isn't there. So we had to just do what we could, you know, and knowing that our offensive linemen were going to basically be back again and we're going to be growing and we're going to be more experienced. We've got Dwayne for a whole season and an off season and all of that. That's a huge deal. He's a fantastic football player. Posick's getting better. Britt's going to just continue to improve. Fetty's going to get better, you know, and we know all the improvements are going to happen. We went out and went after DJ Fluker to get a big monster of a guy at you know, that could play inside. I thought that would be an area. So we really have at least touched into all of the crucial areas that could cause a bit of an adjustment. And I think we needed an infusion of new. I think we just needed to be new and fresh to go ahead and make the turn. But it isn't philosophically changing. It's really just changing kind of the insides of it.
This might be the dumbest question I've ever asked you, but I'm going to ask you anyway. I think it sounds dumber than it actually is.
I can't wait for this one.
How important is the running back to your running game?
Well, it's crucial. Yeah, the running back's ability to make things happen when things aren't quite right is kind of a, you know, it's an art. And some guys have it and some guys don't. And so that's just part of it. But also the explosiveness that to have a guy in there that can make a huge play out of a normal play with speed and vision and that kind of savvy that makes him unique. It's huge. So it's really hard to have a really dynamic running game without a dynamic running back or pair or trio. And so we think we have a really nice formula right here. Chris Carson is a guy we have been excited about since the moment we got him, and he looks incredible now in the off-season program. And we're still waiting to see if CJ can stay healthy and stay out there and do his thing, because we know that he's got great dynamics to him. And Mike Davis did a nice job for us last year when he was called to duty. So add Rashad to that, and let's see what happens. You know, I think it could be a really exciting mix.
You said philosophically it won't change, and you want to be balanced. You always have been, not run first. I think you've educated us very well through the years. But how about just scheme-wise? You know, with Mike coming in, with Schottenheimer coming in, will there be more variance in the run game, or will there be more elements in that run game?
Yeah, Mike does bring a little different variety, and we're still going to run zone plays, and they're still part of our offense. But Mike is a really good angle blocking background guy, and so he brings us the power. He brings us some G plays where we can get the ball on the edge, and we'll be able to catch up a little bit differently to just take advantage of our guys. I think that you're going to see some dynamics to our players, and you're going to see DJ as a monster of a guy at 350-something pounds right now. You're going to see Posick look different. Posick's probably 18 to 20 pounds heavier than he was a year ago. He looks fantastic
right now.
Threw a
good first pitch last night, by the way.
Was that right?
Yeah, he threw out first pitch last night.
Did he bring it? Did he, a little junk?
Pretty good.
Scrooge or something?
Pretty strike. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say strike.
Good.
Yeah, he did look bigger, though. Well, I don't think there was a question about that.
I like it. Anyway, so you know, I just think that there's some elements to it. Yeah, that are going to be a little bit different. I think it'll be more subtle than maybe you would think for the fans watching, but it does give us variety. We'll alter our attack and do a few things we can do really to take advantage of Russell and his element as well. So there's some fun things.
Was it those two? As you characterize Schottenheimer and Solari, we haven't had this chat, and I've obviously heard you speak about it, but why those two?
Brian has an extraordinary background. He's been through all kinds of stuff. The guy coming in here needed to be able to evaluate what we've done and take the best of the things that we've done and then add to it and tweak. We didn't want a wholesale change, and Brian had the background to understand all of that and also bring us newness and some freshness that we needed. He and Mike have a background together and great respect for one another. That communication is crucial. But what is different really in format right now is Shotty is really calling the shots. He's the designer. He's the play caller. He's the quarterback coach. That I wanted to shift that if we could, and we did. And that's a little bit different because we had two guys really working it. They shared, Tom and Daryl shared the leadership part of it, and so it's a little bit different in formula. I think it's going to be nice. It's been really fun to watch him take over. So I think it's the background, the diversity, and also the ability to you know, kind of interpret what we've done and then take the best of it and then translate it and move forward.
Is that a streamlining almost of the play calling process?
Well, I think I think that what you're getting at is, yeah, in that he's in charge of the whole thing. You know, before we would share the run game and the pass game stuff, which worked great for us for years. But this format will just be a little bit different in that regard. The direction and the voice will be a little bit more precise.
You mentioned a freshness and a newness in the coaching staff. There's going to be some freshness and newness in the locker room as well. And a couple of the major figures in this locker room for the last half a decade or so or more have departed this offseason. How important was that freshness and newness to you?
It's good. It's a good. It's kind of just feels like it felt 4 or 5 years ago, you know. And it's different already. You can tell. There's a great enthusiasm. There's a great juice about it. The opportunity for all of these guys is really clear. You know, you don't come in here with guys that have been playing in the same position for 5 or 6 years. You know, it's hard to come in here and really think and hope that you're going to be able to beat those guys out. Well, that ain't what's going on right now. It's wide open competition the way we love it, and you can sense the energy about that.
So, were you sad when you heard some of the things that Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman said on the way up?
Well, no, I'm not sad. I'm not surprised, though.
It would have made me sad if I were you.
Well, no, it didn't. Because we've just been through so much, and I know where their head is at, and they're looking at stuff, and they can go from one moment to the next and see things a little bit differently. It can change for them. And they're battling. They're out there battling for their own sake. Yeah, it would be nice if they saw it differently. I see it differently than they saw it.
Do you feel like you went to bat for them a bunch of different times, and at the end they kind of bit you for it?
No, because they don't. That's not how they are. That's just the media thing. I know where their heart
is. How it feels. I mean,
I know that, but I know where their heart is. I know who they are.
So you think what they're saying publicly is not necessarily how they feel?
I know how they feel. I've been with them too much. There's no confusion there. It's disappointing that that's what has to come out, because you all have to deal with it. I'm not worried. I wish it wasn't that way, but I know where they're coming from. And we'll always be connected forever because of the time we spent together. Regardless of what they say, I'm not going to be that petty about it. It's they're battling on their own right now, and they're trying to figure out how to make it come together in this new setting that they're in. And it's difficult on them. It's a challenge for them too. They're trying to find their way. So as always, our kids always make mistakes, and they falter, and they don't quite pull it off like you like. And then you guide them and you help them, and so somewhere down the road, everything will be fine. I'm not worried.
My father-in-law likes to say life's about trade-offs. He's probably said that to me 100 different times in multitude of different ways, whether it's parenting or business or
obviously
otherwise.
You're not getting the pointer.
Life is about trade-offs. You know what? He hasn't said it as much the last 10 years. You're right. Maybe I learned something the first 15 with his daughter. But is some of that what Mike's referring to, just the trade-off of really emotional guys? You want emotional-driven, independent-thinking guys. And you know what? The trade-off of it is maybe at the end, they're going to continue to be emotional and continue to capture it the way they want it to.
Yeah, and I know their heart. You know, I mean, they can't fool me. They can say whatever they want to say. I know where they're coming from, and I know what they mean, and I know what's behind what's going on. And they could say the same thing about me as well. But that's – so I'm not going to get into the petty part of that thing, because – it'll go on by, and they'll go, things will change and things will happen, and we'll see the real truth in the long term.
But I think you have said to us over the years that, last year, maybe even the year before, you are always evolving. You don't just sit there and present the same messages. You know, especially when you had guys here as long as you did, that you have to make sure that it is fresh, that there is some newness to those guys.
Yeah, but you're responding to the fact that they're saying that something gets stale or whatever. They have a responsibility to stay fresh as well. They have a responsibility to see it new. They have a responsibility to keep making this a challenge for themselves. And somewhere in there, that's what I'm telling you. There's somewhere in there, of course I do. Shoot, yeah, man, I'm a teacher. I got to help these guys learn. I got to do whatever it takes to get that done and get the communication right. So we're constantly tweaking. We're constantly evolving. They need to do the same. And the freshness can come from both directions, or see you later. If it's in the right place, go. You got to go. You're out of here. And so that's a point I don't mind making, but it was time for these guys to move on. And so obviously, you could hear it in them. So because there's 99% of these guys, or like right now, 100% of these guys, they're ready to rock and roll and go for it. And away we go. Competition never gets old. There's no staleness in that. You're battling, you're working your tail off to prove your point, to make your way. That never gets old. And so you can see it. It's at hand right now. It's going to be really fun to watch these guys come together.
Was 2017 a wake-up call for you in any way?
No, I was just disappointing. It's just disappointing that we weren't able. We had a really good club to put together, and we just couldn't keep it all healthy and keep it right. But most of all, we lost our balance in the darn running game again. It happened 2 years in a row, and that's why we spent so much focus to try to get it back in there. It isn't, like you said, and I appreciate you saying it isn't like 3 yards in a cloud of dust. That's not what we're doing. It ain't ground chuck, however he used to explain that. To us, it's about balance so that you can formulate your whole approach and you make your opponents have to deal with all aspects of this game. And it feeds everything. And that feeds the throwing game. It feeds the pass protection. It feeds the defense. It feeds field position, all of the important things that make this game work.
If those field goals were made, I've gotten this question 100 different times from 100 different people. Those field goals are made against Washington and Arizona.
Really?
And you're an 11-5 team. Is all of this go down?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that. I don't think my evaluations would change. My frustration is about what we're trying to, because it isn't about the 11-5. It's about how it happens and how it's going and all that. So I was frustrated throughout because, and I have been for a couple of years about this, because we can't see us in action the way we want to see us, and we're working at it. We're trying. We'll see if we can pull it off this time around.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. If it has been a couple of years, maybe it gave you some of the freedom to make some of the moves.
Okay.
We'll just leave it there. All right, let's go off the board for a minute. Brock and I were talking about this, and we like just kind of getting your opinion as a football guy. Who has the greatest NFL highlight reel in history?
And this was born out of what Scott Frost said to us this morning.
Scott Frost told us that Shaquem Griffin jumped 24 feet 10 inches in a long jump when he was in high school, which is obviously insane.
Yeah.
He did that in Florida.
Nebraska.
What he knew is that it tied the Nebraska record, which had been set by Gale Sayers. And we were wondering if Gale Sayers had the greatest highlight reel in history.
I could have set that up for you if you would have asked me, if you wouldn't have gone that far. I said Gale Sayers.
You think the greatest highlight reel, you could put together 15 plays?
There's two guys. It's Barry Sanders and Gale Sayers. Ooh. My favorite, though, is Gale Sayers. And I would have said it that way, but I'm not so sure that anybody can have a better highlight film than Barry Sanders.
How about Walter Payton?
But, he had great ones, too. But to me, Barry's crazy stuff that he did, but my favorite by far, and I got his picture on my wall for that, you know, Gale's up there, because he's been my all-time favorite.
That's cool. We asked on Twitter. There were a lot of interesting responses from Randy Moss to Michael Vick to Marshawn to Cam Chancellor, Ronnie Lott. I mean, you start putting together highlight reels. There's some pretty good ones in NFL history. Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah. How about a coach on the other side who had pretty good highlight reels? Certainly his teammates did, Kenny Norton. So we talk about the offensive side, but you also make change there with the voice defensively. And Ken Norton, I'm excited to watch him coach this weekend. And you know, he went away, and I'm probably got valuable experience learning on the fly away from kind of home and you and coming back. What is he going to bring to you defensively?
I'm so thrilled to have him back. You know, Kenny, since the years we worked together at San Francisco when he was a pain in the butt for me, you know, when I was coaching him, to the times that we kind of raised him up from a graduate assistant on throughout the ranks at SC and here, once we got together, I mean, I just loved the guy and loved his energy and loved what he brings to the players. He brings a mentality and an outlook that is so unique. And, I mean, he's a unique, extraordinary character. And something I said to him years ago, we were standing in the parking lot where the network was set up years ago. I had done an interview, and then I called him out. I said, wait, have you ever thought about doing any coaching, you know? And I said it to him in the first conversation. Ken, I don't want you to ever be any different than you've been as a player. I just want you to be the exact same guy you've always been. And if you do that, you're going to have a marvelous career. And we're going to love it. And it just came through from my observation. He's one of my favorite guys to work with ever because of the energy, the character, the competitiveness, the mentality that he brings. And he said it too a long time ago. He said, well, all I really want to do in coaching is I just like to help guys experience what I got. You know, and that's kind of what he's done. And in that, he makes a connection that's just it's just unique. And so I'm just thrilled to have him back. I'm really happy for the players because he just has a way about him he's one of a kind.
Coach, how do you feel about having Shaquem Griffin here?
I love that he's here. I love that he's here because he's everything we've ever talked about. Grit, competitive, tough, chip on the shoulder, something to prove. He's all of that. And he's overcome. He has really overcome so much stuff, and more even than all of the that you know on the outside. There's more stuff that in his story that's remarkable. That he's got something to prove. That that's like I like battling with him. That's it. You know, like he can be on my team anytime. You know, let's go.
The program need an infusion of that.
Everybody does. We can never have enough of that. We never have enough competitiveness and the feisty and the aggressive and the chip on the shoulder. Shoot, yeah, man.
You try to teach competitiveness, right? And you try to teach grit and all that. I had a scenario the other day in my own personal life that it made me think of you a little bit. My daughter is 6. She is not the world's greatest athlete. That's not her strength. She's a little more of an intellectual right now than an athlete. And she was out scooter racing with her younger sister. She beat her younger sister in a race. And she yelled, I won, I won, I won. And then she started taunting her with the little kid nan-nan and boo-boo thing, right? And my younger daughter is so upset. She comes back into the house and she's crying. And Avery did this. So I tried to talk to Avery about it later. And I'm trying to find how do you walk that line between happy you won and excited to beat somebody else in the competition that's important without taunting them when it's all said and done and being a poor sport?
Well, it does go back to understanding what you're competing for, you know, and if you're competing to beat somebody, that's one thing. Our conversations and our teachings all go back to competing is striving to be your best. And so if... You know, if your younger daughter did a great job of doing the best she could, but she didn't win, that's all you could hope for. And so an understanding of that, we're constantly trying to teach the regard that takes to understand that. And knowing what you're competing for really is the essence of that. So it goes back to the lessons before it ever happens. Yeah, that's a good illustration for you. You got to back up and sure, you know, it isn't about... To me, this is it. I think if it gets back to beating somebody and rubbing her nose in the dirt, I think that's you're on the wrong track and you're not on course to find your best. You know, everything's related to somebody else. So it really goes back to relating to your own experience, your own accomplishment.
You want to come talk to the 8-year-old baseball team?
I'm going to bring Pete out to my house, talk to my kids, and talk to your baseball team.
Bring him on.
Sure.
I'll cook for you.
You do that for free, right? You don't get paid to do that, dude.
Hey, can we shift gear just a few last minutes here? Because I know you got to run, too. But Earl, where are we at with Earl Thomas as he sits here today and so much conversation?
We're lucky to have him on our team. He's a terrific football player. He's in the prime of his career, and we're lucky that he's here with us and have been to watch him grow and become the player that he is, you know, and that's it. That's it. He's never not been a Seahawk. That's it. You know, all the other talk and all the other conversation, all the whatever, you know, it had nothing to do with anything. He's been under contract and with us the whole time, and he's wanted to be here the whole time. There was that that thing that happened that when we beat Dallas, he did what Avery did. You know, he did. You think he went over to the other locker room because he was so humble and all that? He was freaking jacked to beat the Cowboys, and he went over there to strut his stuff a little bit and got himself in a situation where, you know, I talked to him minutes after that happened. Somebody came and told me, and he said, "What? I didn't do that. I didn't mean, you know, he had no intention of that coming up, but it started there." Kind of a furor, and that's just the media and all that. So we're expecting them to have a great season.
Are we close to a decision on either Cam Chancellor or Cliff Averill?
It's coming up. Yeah, I think June is the month for some evaluations here. We'll see what happens. Sorry, I got nothing else for you.
Totally understand.
It's been a long time saying the same thing.
When we get out here later this weekend, get a chance to watch these guys, what will pop about Rashad Penny? I mean, he's the first pick that you guys made in this draft. What should pop there?
Oh, boy, he's really fast, and he's very instinctive, and he's very smooth. He's really he's silky the way he runs, you know, and he's got this this sense of how to burst that has been just extraordinarily valuable to him in the return game. He is, you know, he's got a way of feeling things, and then when he hits it, he hits it, and he's strong enough, he's big enough, and he's played almost 230 pounds before, that he's strong enough that he just rolls right through tackles. You know, he goes right through stuff and doesn't break stride. So he's had a ton of big plays in him and a ton of tough runs and all that, of course, but he's got a real sense about him. I love that he's strong as hell. He's really healthy. He's really fast, and he's really humble. I mean, he's got a lot of really nice attributes to him that we're excited about. And he can catch the football. He's got good hands, too. So,
is there a little line to walk on humility? Because we've heard you say that to a couple of the guys. We heard you say it to Shaquem in the immediate call right afterwards. Be humble now. Be humble. Is there a line to walk between being humble but also being confident enough to go out there
I think humility is good. You know, kind of it's kind of losing its way a little bit around us, you know, in the world. And I think we could all do a lot better job of understanding, you know, how to be respectful and kind of our situations and our opportunities and the people around us and all of that. We always talk about humility, but it doesn't always set. And you've seen some examples over the years. We haven't done a great job of being humble, you know. So as we start our teaching and all that and start the process, I mean, you couldn't have got a better example of it. And I'm not so sure Keem really listened to what I said, because he came around and thought I'm going to be the greatest ever, whatever he said, you know. He didn't quite get it, but I was teaching right off the bat and trying to – and we have – recaptured him at this point right now. We'll see if we can hold on to it.
What? How was yesterday with WeDay here in Seattle?
Oh, it was awesome again. What a great WeDay has been so on point, and we, as we've just seen in recent months with the whole Parkland experience, which has been so impacting with young people kind of stepping to the front and seeing the power and the tremendous value that youth have for our future. WeDay is all about that. That's what it is, you know, gosh, if we could figure out a way to harness this sense that the young people have for doing things right. They're not tainted. They haven't fell into the, I've got to get a job and I've got to make money, and then the money thing becomes part of it. They're just pure and raw and beautifully talented and powerful, and WeDay is a great illustration of all that.
That's why your team went young. You got a young team. You got 70 of them, the biggest class you ever had right here.
Yeah.
And you get to shape and mold them all. Is training camp going to look any different? Any tweaks to training camp from a competition or physicality or anything new coming?
Well, you know, I'm more than ever, I've realized that there has been a big impact from the whole CBA, the whole approach to the game and how things have gone. And we've got to get back to ball, man. We've got to make sure that we can recapture what this game is all about, because so much of the time I just came out of the first meeting with our young guys here to try and mold them into how we can practice within the guidelines. Mm-hmm. And it's not just going for it and competing and battling. There's so many restrictions that when we finally get clear after the first couple of days of practice that we can start practicing this game, man, we got to hit it and we got to be on it. And that's why our health is so important too, because we only have there's 12 days before the first game or whatever the heck it is, you know, and we're playing football. So it's an out of balance approach that we're dealing with, and I can really sense it. So this camp, I'm going to try to recapture it as best we can to get back to the classic elements of this game that are so important: hard work, tough, physical, endure, team, all of the real basics of it. I just hope that we can recapture it, and we're setting the stage for it.
Awesome.
This is fun. Thanks, yeah. Coach.
Good to see you guys.
It was nice to catch up and hear where you're at and where your team is at. I think there's kind of a different kind of excitement.
Don't
right
leave
now.
Us for like 4 months next year.
Yeah, really. What's hibernation been like? It's going to be fun. And I know that there's people are wondering how it's going to go. It's going to be awesome. We're going to be jacked up. We're going to be really talented. We're going to be fast. We're going to be together. I think it's going to be really fun.
Coach, we appreciate it. Enjoy rookie minicamp this weekend. We'll be back Monday morning, 7 a.m. Until then.
Barn.
Gotcha.
See you, everybody.
This is the chopper!